Hello, and welcome to Media Ministry at Holden Village. Today's date is July 1st, 2004. Today's session number is JUL 2004-03. The speaker for today is Lori Jungling. And the lesson is Vocation and Ethics, Summoned Out into What and For Whom. Let's listen in.
It's always good. My name is Lori Jungling, as many of you may have guessed from last night. And today's session is, I've entitled Summoned Out into What and For Whom. And that's a really weird title, I realize, and it's a kind of a strange question to ask. But by the end of the session, you'll understand why I chose that title. One of the things I've always wondered is, what are we summoned out to do? But not only that, what are we summoned out into? We're summoned out somewhere. We're summoned out of ourselves. But what are we summoned into? And I've chosen the language of relationship. Now, some of you who have been to some of my other sessions have probably sensed this ongoing theme in my stuff of dealing with relationship. Lots of people ask me, so, are you in a relationship? And I know what they mean by that. They mean, are you in a romantic relationship? Are you married? Are you seeing someone? Are you dating someone? But I always want to say, I'm not, but I always want to say, yes, I'm in relationship to my parents, I'm in relationship to my brother, I'm in relationship to the people I drive on the freeway with, I'm in relationship to the people I work with, I'm in relationship to the people I vote with, I'm in relationship to the people of this country and to the people of the world, right? So relationship is something that we really don't have a choice in. Whether or not to be in relationship is something we don't have a choice. We are, every single one of us, relational creatures. Now, what we do have a choice is in how we live in those relationships and what type of relationships we live in. So we may choose to be in relationship with somebody as a friend or as an enemy. We may choose to be in relationship with somebody as a lover or a spouse, or we may choose not to be in relationship with them just as a coworker. We may, one thing we often don't have a choice in being in relationship is whether or not we're gonna be parents, although now with birth control, there we have a little more of a choice in that. But we don't choose who our kids are gonna be. We don't choose who our parents are gonna be. And so relationship becomes a part of who we are. We are born and summoned into relationship. Now, what I want to start with today, the ethical theme I chose for today is on sexuality, which I realize in many of our traditions is a big hot topic right now, particularly around the issue of homosexuality. I'm hoping we can look at it a little more broadly, although we can talk about that issue if you like. But what I have here is a case study that I use with students. And if you'd share every two people, let's go over here. Because I only have about eight or nine, and if I need to, I need to make more copies. Or maybe Roy could run up and make a few more copies. In fact, I need a copy too. It does help.
This wire.
How about like six more? Eight more? Ethics is how we live in relationships. And this case study, we're not going to go through every question on the bottom of it, but we'll read it through together. And as soon as we get another copy, so that I can read it too. What I want to dig into first is all the different relationships that are going to come out of this situation that's in this case study. So as we read through it together out loud, I'll read it, you can follow. I want you to think about all the different relationships that are described in this case study. And then we'll go from there. Let's see. I hadn't expected this many.
Well, you can start reading and we can listen if you want.
That's fine. Yeah.
We're good listeners.
Yeah. Okay, but I need a copy. All right. It's retreat time for the congregational leadership at your church. You are a pastor or a youth leader, a council member, some leadership position in Steadfast Love Church in Middletown, Minnesota, population 8,571. How many are members of a town like about that size?
Yeah, I used to live there.
Yeah, Middletown, Minnesota. every year, the leadership of your congregation goes to a nearby Crosscut Bible camp for a weekend retreat to promote fellowship and do some planning for the year ahead. This year, all but two of the 11-member council have come, as well as two co-pastors, the youth and family director, and the choir director. The group is a congenial bunch who work well together, and the disputes that arise usually involve genuine concern about the good of the congregation rather than personality conflicts. You are looking forward to a restful weekend of fun and productivity. After the evening meal on the first day, the group is given some free time to relax. You decide to take a walk along one of the many trails in the area. 20 minutes into the walk, you hear voices and sounds ahead of you. As you come around the bend in the trail, you recognize two members of your council, Ellen Markinson, who is the vice president, and Dave Johansson, who is the secretary of the council. They are involved in a passionate embrace and kiss, and both have removed several items of their clothing. It is clear to you that they are in the middle of a sexual encounter, intense enough that they have not even noticed your presence. Ellen has been married to Ted Markinson for 8 years, and they have two girls, Brianna, who is 6, and Caitlin, who is 3. Ted is an out-of-work computer programmer who stays home to take care of the kids. He is in the beginning stages of opening his own computer consultation business, the first of its kind in Middletown. Ellen sells real estate and has supported the family for the past 2 years after they returned from California to her hometown. Through the town scuttlebutt, you have heard that Ted and Ellen have been having some marital problems. And if you're the pastor, you've counseled them a couple of times. She and Dave dated a couple of times in high school, and now they work together at Dave's real estate agency. Dave Johansson is married to Sheila, your church organist. She was planning to come on the leadership retreat, but Nick, their 4-year-old son, had come down with a small fever, so she chose to stay home. Dave has owned the real estate agency for 10 years and has been fairly successful. Sheila plays the organ for the two Sunday worship services. She accompanies the church choir and the high school choir, teaches piano lessons for 7 grade school students, and helps to run the community theater group. Until this moment, you assumed their marriage to be a content one, although you've noticed Sheila becoming more withdrawn. Finally, Emily, the church secretary of 29 years, has made some mysterious comments to you and others in your hearing concerning Ellen and Dave. And though you love Emily dearly and she does good work for the church, you are also aware that she tends to gossip. For this reason, you, as a leader of the congregation, have always been careful about what you say to and around Emily concerning church business. The frame is frozen on you standing on the trail and witnessing Ellen and Dave's sexual encounter. Now, before we get into what do you do about this situation, which is messy in and of itself, let's identify all the relationships that are a part of this situation. What's the central relationship that's being described here.
Ellen and Dave.
Ellen and Dave, right. Okay. And what else? Who's Ellen married to?
Ted.
Okay. And who's Dave married to?
Sheila.
By the way, is this a pilot for As the World Turns?
Actually, what this is a conglomeration of several real circumstances that I or others have been a part of in their pastoral ministry. It's not one situation, but it is in conversation, you tend to pick up stories, so I put it together. Okay, how about
their children?
Ted and Ellen, how many kids do they have, two?
Two.
Brianna?
And
Caitlin. And Dave and Sheila have one, right? Nick. Okay. All right. So we have the two families plus Ellen and Dave. Who else is involved in this situation?
The church secretary.
The church secretary, Emily. Yes. Okay. Who else?
And by extension from Emily, just about anybody in the congregation.
Exactly. The entire congregation, and even probably, given the size of the community, the entire town.
The students of, is it Sheila?
Uh-huh. All the piano students. Yeah. There's seven of them.
All the people that work at Dave's business.
Oh, yeah.
Church,
the business, the real estate employees, if there are other ones there.
Well, you're connected to all of them too.
Yes.
Okay, how about
Sheila, the choir?
The choir, yes. The high school choir. And the church choir, right?
Mm-hmm. I thought it was Ellen that sold real estate.
They both do.
Ellen works for
Dave. And then is it Ted that's trying to start a new business?
Uh-huh.
All those potential...
the potential clients?
Yeah.
All those hard drives.
How about all these other council members?
Uh-huh.
And how about you yourself?
Your pastor and...
Co-pastor.
Your co-pastor. So, we'll just assume we don't have to. Feel uncomfortable, but yeah, the church council and all the other leaders that are there, including the youth minister, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Family, yeah.
Okay. And let's see, Sheila is the church organist, right? Mm-hmm. So this again affects the congregation. Not only through the council, but it's going to affect Sheila, and that way it will affect the congregation again. Anything else?
Well, the community theater group.
Community theater group, okay. How about their location, where they're at?
The Bible camp, yeah.
The Bible camp.
Yeah, right.
And so all the workers and volunteers at the Bible camp. How about anything else?
Well, Ellen and Dave's high school classmates, people who knew them from high school.
Oh, that's good. You guys are good. High school classmates who probably already knew that the minute these two started working together, something would happen, huh? Okay, anything else?
There are two of the 11 member councils that are absent.
So you have two absent members.
Who are going to want to know what was going on.
Yeah. And all the bears and chickens.
Yeah.
What about those of you who have been in congregations that had something like this happen. Who else is brought into something like this if things blow up?
The Synod.
The Synod or the district or the wider church. So it depends on, you know, what the organization structure is.
Yeah.
Organization, yeah. Anything else?
You have parents of all of those people.
Yes, you do.
And brothers and sisters.
And cousins and aunts and uncles, and particularly in small towns about this size and smaller. Everybody knows everybody, and this affects everybody. So yeah, all their, I'm going to just write family because it will take me forever. Right?
Also the family and parents of the, of like, especially with the piano students and members of the choir.
And probably all the teachers at the high school. Yep, and family.
And the Bible Camp Board will hear about this.
Yes.
The friends of all the kids.
I think it's the whole state, actually.
The entire state of Minnesota.
At least the county.
County,
whole
county.
It will. It'll probably be on the news, right? Well, we could probably do this forever. I mean, it'd probably be, there'd be people in Africa and Asia that wouldn't know about it, but unless there were missionaries over there from Minnesota who knew.
And Emily will write them.
Be on the website.
Be on the website.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a difference, doesn't it? The current technology that we have right now increases our relationship potential exponentially. More people can know more stuff and be interrelated with us in closer ways than ever before. Before, when we had no railroad and we had no planes and we had no internet and we had no telephone, the communities were very closed knit, and you knew what was going on in your immediate area, but sometimes you didn't hear what was going on in someplace 3,000 miles away for months. So when you have all this technology, it just makes us that much more interrelated and makes it more obvious how interrelated we are.
Would you call that more vulnerable?
Yeah, I think so. And also, it has, I wouldn't say more responsibilities, but a different type of responsibility. Certainly, Alan and Dave, in this case study, didn't think through their situation very closely.
Oh, they should have gone off the trail.
Yeah, they could have at least gone off the trail. You know, they may have thought about how it might affect their spouse, and maybe how it might affect their kids, and perhaps about how it might affect their family. But I doubt they thought very much of how it would affect the congregation of which they're a part, all the people that are there at the Bible camp with them. Like you say, they're standing in the middle or close to the trail so that they could be seen, didn't realize, didn't think through the fact that they might be, and that that would affect, you know, all these people in some way or another. Now, granted, the most pain and the most, you know, the strongest places that it's going to be affected are right here in the immediate families. But I think it will also be very strongly felt in the congregation, given particularly Sheila's place in the congregation, as well as both of them being in leadership positions. You know, now, another thing we could talk about, and we will towards the end, is what do you, as the pastor, or the youth minister, or a member of the council, do about this situation? Who do you tell? Who did you talk to? And, you know, that becomes the relational, ethical question is, I mean, there's lots of ethics, or a lot of possibilities going on here. Surely Dave and Ellen have made some poor ethical choices. But now, you as pastor or leader or youth minister have to make some ethical choices, too. And it's all based on relationship. And let's put that aside just for a little bit, but we'll come back to it, I promise, because I know you're just dying to get into it a little more. One of the things, as I said, you know, what I'm about here is pointing out that the intense relationality in which we exist. And when I talk about relationship, I talk about relationship both with God and with all of creation and every member in it. That includes the land, fellow human beings, the animals, that sort of thing. But with creation. And ethics, very generally, talks about, or in my opinion, is about finding ways, the best ways, to live in life-giving relationship. Now that's a loaded term, but life becomes the center as opposed to death or money or taxes or, you know, the many other things that we can put at the center of our lives. Now I need a couple of actually I need just one volunteer right now. Somebody with a strong hand.
I'll do it.
Okay. I need you to hold your finger like that. All right. That is how I'm imaging a relationship between two people. And it's the whole thing. This is a rubber band, in case you haven't figured that out. It's the whole thing. It's the two people in it plus the rubber band. That's the relationship. Now what happens is when we can break relationship in two ways. We can break relationship by abandoning the other person. So if I pulled and pulled and pulled and pulled, pretty soon the relationship would break, right? The rubber band would break. But there's another way. Hold your finger straight out so that you don't curve it. There's another way, and that's if we consume one another. When we consume one another, we become, for example, possessive or over-controlling, or I often think of abuse as being consumption of one another. And that's when we get too close and the relationship falls away. That's what I identify, stay right there, don't go away yet. That's how I describe sin. It's one of those two things, or sometimes both and. It's when, using the example of the Ten Commandments, when we steal from somebody else, we're breaking trust with them, right? And that is abandoning the relationship. We're breaking trust. And we're consuming their things, and so, you know, either way, the relationship is breaking. When we commit adultery, we abandon one partner, and often it involves consuming the other one. And so it's never one or the other, usually it's often both and. Now, I need a couple more volunteers who have strong fingers. I promise you won't be hurt. Take my place. All right. And then I need another person right about here. This is I've got a thicker rubber band here, which signifies maybe a thicker relationship. Hold up your finger just like that. And a little closer. There we go. And let's kind of reach a little closer to her. It is. It's a thinner relationship. And I need one more person. Yeah.
Now, if I had a whole bunch of... and go over next to him. And this is a really thick relationship. Pretty maybe father-son. There we go. And I should connect it to her too, but I don't want enough rubber band, and I don't want to hurt anybody. Okay. Now, what I'd like you to do is I'd like Roy to go over and get the soccer ball. And I'd like Kelly, is that your name, right? To go over and get that wooden cross over there. And I'd like you to do it without breaking any or losing any of the rubber bands.
Let's do it. Let's go over here.
To work.
Well, let's go get yours first.
We have to work together.
Now, as they walk, the relationships, the rubber bands, are moving back and forth, but they're not breaking. They're in flux. They're fluid, but they're not breaking. But they have to do it together. All our relationships affect all our other relationships. And if you imagine that each one of us was interconnected with the rubber band to everybody else in this room. Thank you. That's how, at least that's how I envision creation. As being interconnected like this. And I envision the Holy Spirit being the life that weaves through all of this, that interweaves through everything. And when we break the relationship, the Holy Spirit, in the power of the Holy Spirit, comes in and tries to repair that relationship or resurrect the relationship. And that's what holds the world together. That's what holds creation together, is the Holy Spirit, God, interworking life in between all of our network of relationships. And as summoned out people, we're called to live in relationship that keeps everything as best as we can in balance. That doesn't mean things can't move a little bit. Uh-oh, we lost one.
Too much movement.
But when we have too much movement, then relationships start to break, people start to get hurt, and people start to die. So, thank you. If I had a way to do it, I would interconnect all of us, because I think it would be a pretty cool approach, but I don't think we have enough rubber bands here or enough space. Now, I've used words like relationship and life-giving relationship, and I've used those words with respect to God, how we're in relationship with God, and also how we're in relationship with one another. And first of all, I'd like to ask you, how do you see the ways, what are some of the ways that you in your own lives, in the lives of with your family, with your friends, with your coworkers, perhaps, live in relationship with God? What are some of the ways that we use to live in relationship with God? With God?
Worship?
Worship. Great. I like this one better. I'm going to leave Chet, Ted, and Sheila. Worship, all right? What else?
Service
to one another, to creation, to God.
Yeah.
Play and celebration.
Oh, what'd you say? First?
Play.
Yeah.
And celebration.
Festivals. Mm-hmm. As we approach one, although I'll have to miss it. What else?
Prayer.
Yeah.
Conversation
with one another?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Interaction with this creation?
Interaction with creation. So height. Mm-hmm. A height is part of our relationship with God. work. Okay, say a little more about that.
Well, I'm thinking that the different kinds of work that we do, in that we relate with people a lot, and we live out the gifts God has given us, and we're also sometimes in tension with others, mm-hmm. sometimes in harmony with others, and all of that invites the presence of the Spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Thank you. That's a good image.
Conflict and resolve.
Conflict and resolve. Sometimes we wish that we wouldn't have conflict, right? Mm-hmm. It sure would make life a lot easier, but I think it would also make life a lot more boring. We just would hope that we could find ways to solve our conflicts without violence, without hurting one another. How about anything else? How about merely taking in a breath and letting it out? Breathing is relationship with God. The Old Testament uses the Genesis story, particularly the second one about Adam and Eve, uses the image of the Holy or the Spirit being breathed into Adam. And so the Spirit becomes a part of us, and our very breath is relationship with God.
How about our relationship like to the soil when farmers rotate crops and take care of the land and the soil?
Yeah, relationship with the land.
Eating.
Food. Which we love to do here at Alden. Anything else? Music.
Yeah.
Music. Is a huge way. We
is that the same as celebration, though?
Yeah, I mean, certainly.
Putting all of the arts.
All of the arts. Art.
Knowledge in general.
Sculpture. Learning.
Huh?
Learning.
Learning.
Knowledge. Learning. Yeah. I like that one. I think, you know, life at its most abundant in all its ways. Our relationship with God. Yeah.
Parenting.
Parenting. Parenting, yes. Thank you.
Just right. Caring for one another.
Caring for one another.
Just in general.
Uh-huh.
Or even noticing other people's needs.
Nurturing. Nurturing. Yeah.
Team Chash.
Biologically, we're all related.
Yeah.
We're all made up of the same.
Yeah.
Basic amino acids.
Uh-huh.
All life, anyway.
Exactly. And those, you know, I think of the, I'm not a biologist by any means, and maybe you can speak more to this, but I think of the reactions and the interactions that go on inside our bodies. With everything that goes on inside, it's all interrelated, right? I mean, without the nerves that take things from signals from our brain to the rest of our bodies, we couldn't move, right? I mean, everything is interrelated. I would call that biology. And if you've had a chance to attend any of Tom Pearson's classes, who does the geology, you realize how interrelated the building of the mountains is, and the creation of this beautiful landscape and everything, how it's interrelated to everything else. So, one can put geology. I don't spell very well, so forgive me. Okay, now I'd like to ask one more question of you. If we live in life-giving relationship with God, and in this case, it's God who's giving us life, right? Through this relationship, And through the relationships we have with one another and with the earth, God is giving us life through our parents, through our kids, through learning, through play, through food, through celebration. God is giving all this life to us through these many relationships. Describe to me, or give me some examples of what, of how life has been given to you. You think about all these things, it's like, give me some examples of how life, some really specific examples of how life has been given to you.
I was born.
You were born. Yes. Okay, birth.
Family.
Healthy.
You're healthy. And healthy is a relative term.
Yes.
Baptized.
Yes. Baptized. Yes.
I've been prayed for.
Been prayed for. Yes. And prayed with?
Friendships.
Friendships.
I've been taught. Or education, reading.
Taught how to read, taught how to do math. I mean, it may not always be the funnest subject in the world, but it does come in handy sometimes.
Parents and family.
Parents and family.
I think of the gift of the skill of surgeons that have given me life.
Yeah. Medicine. Communion, supported and nurtured, life, protected. Yeah, somebody else said something?
Communion.
Communion. You mean the Holy Eucharist?
Right.
Good.
What was the original question?
Describe some specific ways how you've been given life.
Encouragement from others.
Generally speaking, giving of any kind.
Giving, you giving others or somebody giving something to you? Both
we,
and?
We giving to others.
Okay. I'm going to put, that's, yeah, I agree. I'm going to put also taking. And particularly in some cultures, it's offensive if you don't take the gift that's given. If everybody gave but nobody took, how could we give? So there has to be giving and taking. Giving and receiving, perhaps, is a better way of saying it. But, and certainly, we believe that all of life is grace. It's a gift. And we need to be open to that, to receiving it, right? Anything else?
Education.
Education, travel. Good.
Examples of others.
Examples of others.
Example they've given.
Uh-huh.
Role models.
Role models, yeah.
And most basic, I've been provided with good water and food.
Yep. And shelter?
Yeah.
Food. Now, there are a lot of people in the world that haven't been. And shelter. Okay. Anything else? Now, I'd be a little downer, but I'm going to ask you, how are some ways that life has been taken from you?
Pollution.
Pollution.
Sickness.
Sickness. And of course, I'm going to add to that, it hasn't been taken from you. Well, yes, it has. If you have a family member who's died, that is a life, that is part of your life, that has been taken to you, from you. If you think of the relationality, as I've had everybody standing up here, when we lose one member of that relationship, a piece of us dies, right? Mm-hmm. So,
conflict?
Conflict and war.
Guilt.
Conflict without, yeah, war. Without, or without resolution. Okay.
Guilt.
Betrayal
and guilt. One of the most life-taking things in the world is to betray somebody else's trust.
Maybe just like a lack of knowledge.
Ignorance?
Ignorance, yeah.
Is that right?
Depression and despair.
Blame, shame.
And shame. Poverty. Poverty.
Poverty.
Better end the other one. Riches.
Excellent. Yes. Too much on one side or the other.
Fear.
Fear. Yeah. There's here's an interesting one, because for those of you who are Lutheran, you may have learned the Small Catechism, and Luther talks about the Ten Commandments, and he explains them at the beginning of each one. He says, we are to fear and love God. Well, there's two different kinds of fear that we're talking about here. The type of fear that I think, who was the one that said? Yeah. That you're talking about is this death-dealing fear that just consumes a person. The type of fear that I think Luther is talking about is awe and trembling in front of something that's completely mysterious. You know, kind of that sense that Moses had standing before the burning bush. Take off your shoes. So fear, you know, it's used a lot in theological circles, and there are different ways of understanding fear. Anything else?
Power.
Power. Mm-hmm. Power against? Or power, period?
Power, period. It tends to corrupt.
There's a good side to power, too.
Mm-hmm. Power can, yeah, corruptive power is destructive, but power on behalf. And that's what we were talking about. Did any of you attend the anti-racism workshop yesterday? Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about how power, in that case, we're talking about political power, but can work towards. And how many of you saw the movie? We had a movie on the history of the civil rights movement. And if you remember, those of you that saw the movie, they showed the marchers, for example, marching to the capital of Alabama, was it? And they were stopped by all the police officers of the state police of Alabama. And then they were assaulted and attacked and beaten and killed and sent back. Well, the next day, the President of the United States, Lyndon Johnson, sent in the National Guard to escort them on their way. There's two different uses of power there. There's the use of power by the state against the people who were marching, and the use of power by the federal government, who happens to have a little more power than the state in this case, on behalf of the people who are marching. So in both cases, power was used. But if you give the nation too much power, it will corrupt.
Perhaps a better way to put it is love of power?
Love of power. Yes. Yes.
Misuse
of power. Yeah. How about, you always said riches, so love of money. How about, like, jealousy? Fun. Jealousy and envy.
Hate.
Yeah.
Greed.
Yeah. All those.
Lying is kind of a first cousin of betrayal.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Lying. That's what's happening here. With Alan and Dave, lots of lying. Not only, I mean, betrayal and lying, and I mean, what are some of the things that are hopping out of this case study?
Denial.
Yes.
Selfishness.
Stupidity. Should have moved off the trail.
Yeah, not thinking with the brain.
Weakness.
I'm going to put that in the middle.
Of the flesh.
delusion.
Delusion.
Yeah.
Self-deprecation.
Self-deprecation. I don't even try to spell that one. Yes.
Not setting your priorities.
Huh?
Not setting your priorities or having the wrong priorities.
Right. Right. Notice how on the light side, things are more in balance. Life becomes about maintaining balance. Balance in your relationships, balance in your travel. If you travel all the time and you have a family, your family's going to suffer, right? Balance in what, you know, being taught in your education, in your friendships. It's about balance. It's about living and maintaining our relationships in ourselves, with other people, with God, in balance. All these things throw off the balance. They weigh at one side or the other. And they end up destroying one another, or destroying the earth, or destroying who we are in balance. When we do these things, and when we do these things, we become, I think I used this in the sermon last night, we become masks of God. And we become little Christs. The masks behind which God is working. Some of you may have heard this. How many of you had manna for breakfast this morning? Anybody have manna? Nothing fell from the sky? It was prepared for us by the work staff, by the kitchen staff. It was brought up the hill by the transportation staff. Somebody grew it down the hill. And that becomes, all those people become masks of God to us. Because they're doing those things that we need to get food and water and shelter. So whenever we act in life-giving balance in our relationships, we become masks of God. And whenever I think little Christs, it's the same type of idea, but there, nobody mentioned this one yet. Love. Loving our neighbor. In all that we do, and in enlarging our understanding of what the neighbor is.
Are you saying Ellen loves David?
No. Well, I mean,
they probably do.
They may think they do, and certainly there's something there. I didn't mean to put it there, implying that though. I remember somebody asked me when I was presenting this, or at some point, they asked me, okay, well, if it's all about love and relationship, then it should be okay for them to love one another, right? And if you just look at Ellen and Dave, yeah, sure. But when you start adding all the other relationships into it, and you see what happens when they choose to love one another in a sexual way, when these two, when Ellen has promised to be faithful to Ted, and Dave has promised to be faithful to Sheila, promises are broken, and betrayal happens. And so, love, sure, they're members of the same congregation, they're members of the same community. We all should love one another, but it's how we act on that love. And in this case, my feeling is, ethically, that they have loved inappropriately. Let's see, where do they end up?
So then the way that they would go about it is first get their conflict either positive or negatively with their legal mate before they go for a new relationship.
Yeah, I mean, given human sin, we make promises, and given human sin, we may end up breaking those promises. And it may be to the extreme where there has to be a divorce. One hopes not. I don't think divorce is the life-giving thing to do. Anybody who's been through a divorce, anybody who's had family members go through divorce knows It is not a life-giving thing. It's very painful and very hurtful. But sometimes it's better than the alternative, particularly in cases of abuse, where that's the only way. And that's why I said earlier, abuse becomes a consumption. The abuser just consumes the one who's being abused to the point that they have no life left. And so sometimes the only way is to get out of that relationship in that way.
It's not life-giving, it's life-saving, though.
It's life-saving. You're right. Exactly. Okay, let's go back to the case study for a few minutes. Basically what I've just described, and if you want to add more, please do, the ethical issues that are involved. The ethical issues here in this case are about the relationships that we form and how we maintain them. And the Ten Commandments are rules that have been given to us to help us maintain balanced relationships. When we steal, we hurt our relationships. When we kill, obviously we hurt our relationships. When we bear false witness, we got Emily down here gossiping all over town, probably not telling the truth. And if you, again, if you know Luther's explanations to the Ten Commandments, he always adds a positive. He always says, not only don't say bad things, but say good things about your neighbor. Speak on behalf of them and protect their reputation. So those are, you know, are there other ethical issues involved that you see?
Well, if you could think fast enough, if you're the person that's coming upon this scene, I think you'd have to measure, well, you know, ask this question to yourself real fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I would have a temptation to go up to them and say, "Hi, how are you doing?" But it would be embarrassing for the three of us. But it might stop the whole thing from going on.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably leading to your next question, but I'd just treat him like a bear. If you come across a bear on the path,
you start
back. First thing you do is you just back away till you're out of sight, and then you start making noise.
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah, they're probably bears.
The chances are this isn't their first encounter.
Right. If they're willing to do it in the woods.
If Emily's already talking about it, I mean, I think there's probably a lot of people that actually do know or at least suspect, because, I mean, I joined a company that where that situation had gone on, not while I was there, but beforehand, where there was a, people married to each other and,
mm-hmm.
you know, having a relationship with somebody else in the company also married. And it was really an awful situation. It was really uncomfortable. Everybody knew, you know, it was like the unspoken thing. And it was quite painful for even people who were just peripherally involved.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. As leaders, you know, I've specifically indicated that you were in some way a leadership position. As leaders of the church or within the church, do you have different responsibilities as a regular layperson? Or is it, if you were just a regular person as part of this congregation, would you have a different responsibility?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, in some ways, there's the issue of confidentiality and privacy involved here.
Mm-hmm. Particularly, yep, it may be that you, as the pastor, are one of the leadership members, and Ted and Sheila are the last people to know. Yeah.
If ethics is seeking the highest common good, ethics common good,
mm-hmm.
it is so sad in this whole scenario, the loss of freedom. We all lose freedom. Everybody has lost the ability to make choices. All of a sudden, it's like we're frozen We're slogging through molasses. We just don't know how to deal with it. We've lost that wonderful sense of freedom that we should have in community, mm-hmm. that freedom which God gives us.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so sad.
Yeah, yeah. Freedom in relationship that we have with everybody there.
Exactly.
Now, you look the pastor or whoever you are as you come upon them on the trail, see them differently. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Norm.
Yeah, and I think the flip side of that is precisely the freedom that you have by knowing your boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And ethically, they have not discerned or held the boundaries, and therefore the freedom which curbings on roads give to you are gone. And it seems to me that's a critical element in Christian ethics, is that, as you indicated with Luther, it's not just that the commandment says, thou shalt not murder, but then it opens up all the possibilities of what thou shalt. Nurture your neighbor, promote their best interests, etc. And there's all kinds of freedom to act within boundaries.
Right.
Yeah,
I mean, freedom from
yeah.
is one way to think of it, but actually what we're talking about here is freedom for.
Yeah.
Freedom for living in loving relationship with one another.
Yeah.
And relationship implies some sacrifice. We cannot live in relationship with one another without some sacrifice. The minute Ted and Ellen made a promise to one another, and Dave and Sheila made a promise to one another, they limited themselves and said, I will not go after sexually or it's beyond sex. It includes sexuality, but it is also beyond that when it comes to giving one's promise and commitment to another person. They limited themselves. And so being in relationship isn't just free to do whatever I want to do. It's limiting oneself to have the freedom for living in relationship. And all this life, freedom for life.
Yeah, and I think it's not up there, but you mentioned it's trust.
Trust.
You've great trust in all of your relationships, and when you see that trust broken with a person, not with you, but that person you have a relationship with someone else, you start to question the trust between you and that person.
Right. Exactly.
And is this something now? Do I have to do some reparation or do some coordination or communication with this person to make sure that trust is there? Or am I always in the back of my mind going, well, if he did it to his wife,
mm-hmm.
is he going to do it to me?
Exactly. That's what happens. And it's very easy to break trust. It's very hard to repair it.
But are there some people that don't care whether trust is there or not?
Yeah. I think there are. Yeah. Do you have your hand up, Kelly?
Oh, no.
Sorry.
She's
stretching. Yeah. I think it does bring up, too, the sense of what your ultimate values are by which you operate. Because, if you were back in the 60s with free love,
yeah.
then Ellen and Dave are just fine. Because if you're not one with the one you love the one you're with. And that can be an ultimate principle that you operate by.
Exactly.
So implicit here are some moral values regarding boundaries and respect for commitments and relationships, yeah.
Exactly. And I think, right, we're almost out of time, but I think right now what's happening in our churches and in our country is that those very boundaries are being questioned and moved and changed with the issue particularly of homosexuality, but also with the issue itself of sex. For thousands of years, in many cultures, attached to Christianity, sex has been seen as bad. Now, probably in part because of the free love movement in the 60s and the 70s, and some see this as a threat and some see this as a gift, we're starting to see sex as something that's more a part of who we are as created human beings, that can be used to help life and support and nurture life. It also can be used for death and harm and hurt and pain. And what we're trying to figure out now in this new age of very deep interrelationality, as we're coming more and more aware of that, is what does it look like now to be sexual? And in our lives. And I think one of the concerns I have myself is up to this point, sex has been so rule-driven that we've forgotten the goal behind it, behind the rules. And that, for me, is life. How can we talk about our sexuality in ways that we hold up life, and giving life, and sharing life, and nurturing life, and protecting life? And I mean by life, including birth, procreation, but also the many other ways that we receive and share life with one another. I'd be willing to engage this more with people on an individual or communal basis, if you'd like, but we are out of time, and so I don't want to make you late for your next engagement. So.
Thank you.
Thank you all for coming.
No, it's wrong.